Hello and welcome to The Stack. For this week's show, I speak with Maria Fernanda Delmas, editor-in-chief of celebrated Brazilian financial daily Valor Econômico, plus Ricardo Moreno, a friend and creator of The Summer Hunter, and finally, the new editor of Bon Appetit. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. And I will start with what is, for me, one of the best news sources in Brazil, Valor Econômico, a financial daily that rises above silly polarization. While I was in São Paulo, I met its editor-in-chief, Maria Fernanda Delmas, who spoke Brazilian media and her plans for the paper this year.
Valor Econômico is a newspaper launched 24 years ago, and it became the main vehicle of business and macroeconomics and economics in general. And it belongs to Grupo Globo, that is the owner of TV Globo and O Globo newspaper and several other news outlets. And we are based in São Paulo because the whole market is here. But we have offices in Brasília, that is the capital of the country, and is a very important hub of news. And we have an office in Rio, where the group was born, and where we have important companies and government offices there. So now we was born as a print newspaper with a website operation, but we've been passing through a digital transformation as the whole media in general. But we've intensified this transformation in the last few years. Now we have more readers and subscribers in digital than in print, but print edition is still very important. It's our, I used to call it our flagship store, the print edition. And now we have the print newspaper, the website, and Valor Pro, that is a really real-time service for traders and other specialists. And we have Valor Invest, that is a website for small and personal investment. We have several niche titles, such as small companies, agribusiness, and automobile business, and etc. So nowadays, Valor is an umbrella of a lot of content in business, macroeconomics, economics in general.
Tell me more about your history here in the paper. I know you're the editorial director, but for how long have you been working here?
I've been working as editorial director for 3 years. I moved from Rio to São Paulo, but I am working for Grupo Globo since 2000. Exactly 24 years, exactly the age of Valor Econômico. I used to work for O Globo newspaper. 3 years ago, I was invited to improve the digital transformation of Valor. So I'm here running the newspaper for 3 years, responsible for gathering this team to think about not only in editorial content in a classic way, but looking for innovation in events and other initiatives such as education and any other ways of making content, new podcasts, etc.
One thing, Maria, that I love about Valor, I think is a very solid newspaper. And I think, like at the rest of the world, media have become quite polarized. I'm not saying that in Brazil is the worst. I don't think it's even as bad as the US. But I think Valor is solid. I mean, you have your opinion, but it's not trying to be controversial. It's something you can trust, and that's why I have a lot of graphs, a lot of data as well. I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about that, and I wonder if that's part of the success, because in this age of fake news, people can trust a brand as solid as Valor.
Yeah, thank you for following us. And we, despite all the changes we have to make to evolve, we are very stuck in our principles of being a professional journalism with deep analysis, with data, with context, for example. So we don't negotiate those principles. Every innovation that we do is built over those principles. But you are right, we are in a polarized world, and we strongly believe that we have to give the audience information for them to think about what they need or what they want. So we think our role is providing information, providing data, providing many ways of thinking, listen to different sources with different opinions, but with strong arguments. So it's our role to provide the best information we can give the audience as a professional news outlet.
And I want to talk a little bit about the subscription numbers and everything, but you mentioned before we started the interview that although people are moving digitally, even when they are digitally, they like that bit where you read Valor as if you were reading a proper newspaper. That's quite interesting. Perhaps people are looking for the sense of organization in a way, right?
Yeah. Of course, we have a 24/7 website. Mm-hmm. We are on time all the time. But we know that our organization, our way of saying or covering some issues are important for the audience. So it's even a kind of paradox that the world is going digital, but people don't exactly need to take the print edition, but they love reading our organization. Mm-hmm. So we are growing in the PDF section. Mm-hmm. People want to wake up and take their tablets or their mobile phones and read what we are offering in terms of first page, the sections, the what is in the on the top of the page or is bigger than other coverages. So we are growing with our print organization, but in digital. I think it's a very interesting way of being digital too. And of course, we are 24/7, so we are very careful with the daily news, the 24/7 news. We try to offer the audience a place where you can come to understand the world, not only to be informed with breaking news or commodity news. It's important for us, of course, being updated, but we think that people come to Valor to understand some news in politics, in economics, in even in culture. We have a very great investment in culture and in career, in legal news. So on those coverage, we want to be the place where you come to understand the world, not only to be first informed.
And one thing I noticed about Editora Globo in general, I'm talking about, because in Brazil, like in many countries, it's difficult. Some newsstands are closing. Maybe people are not selling newspapers and magazines in shops. But I think every time, even when I go to the airport, to Hudson, there are not many magazines there, but always Editora Globo. Do you think there is, Editora Globo realizes that, yes, digital, but there is that market specific, the people that want to buy a copy of a magazine or the latest issue of Valor. Do you feel that in the Editora?
Yeah, we feel that there is a good audience for print editions. Especially when you talk about magazines, it's very delicious to read a magazine, feeling the paper, and of course in newspapers too. We are trying to make our feet in the two boats. We can't abandon the print size of the business because it's important, and I believe it's going to be important for a long time. It's changing, but it's important, and invest very heavily in digital. But transporting the same reputation we have in print, because we are legacy media, to digital initiatives.
I wonder, Maria, what can you tell us about 2024 in terms of projects? I mean, something that comes to mind, you mentioned, of course, you're a financial newspaper, but you cover culture, politics. You have local elections in Brazil, which is very important. I mean, look at the size of our country. I wonder, what can you say to us about what are you planning for 2024?
We have two important elections in the world for our coverage. There are American elections and, as you mentioned, the local elections. And our vision about politics is that politics have a huge influence in economics. So it's our role to report politics because it's important for financial decisions too. And we will have a great coverage, a huge coverage in local elections, but also with American elections. Other projects are going more international. We've made a summit in China in January. We went there to Hong Kong and Shenzhen with a group of speakers and executives to visit some companies and to discuss bilateral relations. In May, we are going to make the same in New York during the Brazil Week. We are going to promote a summit. We are celebrating 200 years of bilateral relations between Brazil and United States. So we are going to make a summit there. We are studying other countries to go and promote trips with executives, with entrepreneurs, with our speakers going there to discuss global economy. Another initiative is, as I've mentioned, education. We've launched 2 years ago a masterclass with a mix of our journalists discussing some cases. We've teamed up with a university here in Brazil, Fundação Getúlio Vargas, and we've launched this course. We have some executive that was awarded in our... We have an annual award to the main CEOs. We've invited them to teach our students about leadership, technology, career in general. So it's one of the initiatives in education. We are studying other initiatives. And last year, we've launched a course of economic journalism, financial and economic journalism for students from all over the country. And we've selected 10 of them to be our trainees. We are very excited to repeat it every year.
And my final question here, are you positive about Brazil and its economic situation? Because there's been some challenging years as well, especially for a newspaper like yours. Do you predict, I don't know, what's your take on Brazil? Because outside has been quite difficult, the image of Brazil outside. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
We are always in our mind that we have to make investigative journalism and we have to be critics of what we cover. But we are always optimist with the country because it's a continental country with a huge market for any company. We have clean energy more than most of the globe. We have very good people here, very interested people, people who work a lot. So we are always optimists and we think that we have to be critics, of course, but also propositive. So we have a lot of projects, for example, for improve entrepreneurship in spirit in Brazil, to improve creator economy, to improve diversity. Diversity is a very important topic for us, to help the companies, the market, to be more diverse. So we are optimists. We know it's a long way to solve a lot of problems, but we try to be part of this debate. Education, we know that the country needs bigger project in education to qualify our children and also to qualify our workers. So we try to be part of the debate and to launch initiatives with coverage, with projects that help the country to achieve a better grade.
That was Maria Fernanda Delmas, editor-in-chief of Valor Econômico. For more information, go to valor.globo.com. And if you want their English content, go to valorinternational.globo.com. And we stay in Brazil, this time to speak with an old friend and former São Paulo correspondent for Monaco, Ricardo Moreno. He's also the creator of the Summer Hunter platform, with a large digital presence looking at the bright side of life and everything that relates to summer the whole year round. As part of the platform, they also publish a magazine. Issue 6 features Brazilian actress Alice Carvalho in the cover. I spoke with Ricardo Moreno about the 10 years of the Summer Hunter.
We're still publishing an yearly magazine. We still believe in magazine. We still believe that magazine is a great thing to create, attach with people, and to use as a relation market thing. We also an Instagram account with 300,000 followers. We publish every day new stories on Instagram. We talk our Instagram as our digital magazine. So we try to put as a regular magazine inside Instagram with cover, title, subtitle, captions. So we try to transplant to digital world the belief we have on print magazines. We also have a newsletter, a weekly newsletter. We also have a benefit club, which we provide to our subscribers free tickets for the best festival, music festivals in Brazil. We launched like a year ago a collab, so we have a apparel line with backpack, tote bag, shoulder bag, bucket hat. So we sell all over Brazil our apparel line. We also have a podcast, a weekly podcast, where we also dive into subjects. We try to use digital and social media to dive deeply in subjects. In opposite, most of the Instagram accounts where they try to sum up the subjects, like TikTok videos or Reels video, we try to make a really deep dive into new subjects, which is a challenge for digital media, but we think we are doing well. And this January, we went to offline. Our belief is the best social media we do offline, looking into the eyes and drinking a beer. So we launched our first summer house in Rio de Janeiro during a whole weekend where we have music all day, pool, cold beer, art exhibition, workshops, talks. But the mainly reason to have this house was to do nothing, to meet people, to chat with new people. We said to do live Tinder on the real life. So we were really trying to use digital media to meet people in real life. Our digital media just a path to something bigger.
Remind us, Ricardo, what is the Summer Hunter about? It's about the beautiful things in life, but also I've been noticing there's also a political side to it as well, but not in the traditional sense.
You're right. When we born, our motto was we follow the sun. We love beaches. We love sun. We are from Brazil, so we really like to live summer all over the year. But with the pandemic and the past of the years, we believe that we could help people to find the solar side of life. So for us, nowadays, summer is more just a mirror season, is a lifestyle. So how can we approach of different subjects, not just solar subjects like abortion, like some politics subjects, but with a solar view, with young journalistic responsible view. So when we did this change, our audience grew a lot. So nowadays we talk about the beautiful places, solar places in Brazil, but we also approach subjects sometimes not to solar, like death. How to deal with the finitude? How can you solar with finitude?
It's very beautiful. Give us some numbers, perhaps, Ricardo, because as you say, Summer Hunter grew quite a lot. I mean, you have a massive presence on Instagram, but also the magazine. So tell me about both the numbers on social media, but also where can people actually find the magazine in case they're looking for the printed issue?
As I said, our magazine is free. We print 5,000 issues. We distribute all over Brazil, around 85 different places as stores, barbershops, bars, parties, cafes. And we also send to 500 people of our mailing list. So we print 5,000 magazines and distribute pretty fast. Our Instagram is 300,000 followers. We engage like 10 million people a month, which is a lot.
I think it's fantastic numbers. And one beautiful thing, Ricardo, when you arrived, is how much you love, you know, being here in São Paulo as well, which is a great city. So tell me more. We're both here from São Paulo, and it's a magical city. Is it a good place to be if you are the editor of a magazine or if you own, you know, something like Summer Hunter as well? Because it's very exciting. We're here at Le Jazz Boulangerie at Pinheiros. Great place as well.
Yeah, for me, São Paulo is the best city in the world. I used to live in New York. I used to live in Buenos Aires. I used to be for a long time in Barcelona. I love three of them, but I love São Paulo much more than New York, Los Angeles, Buenos Aires, Barcelona, Lisboa. There's a lot of problem, as most of the huge cities in the world, but it's a vivid city, you know. If you come here, you can see things growing every week. New buildings, new places like this Boulangerie, new restaurants, new entrepreneurs. So it's pretty exciting to launch it and to run a business here, because you can find people to work with you, and you can find money to support your business as well.
Thank you, Ricardo. And for more information, go to thesummerhunter.com. And finally, not from Brazil like our first two guests, but Jamila Robinson did tell me she loved the country. Jamila is also the new editor of Bon Appetit magazine. She tells me about her plans for a cookbook and what new columns and features she plans to add in the magazine.
I've had a very long career, more than 25 years in the business, from the Detroit Free Press, where I started my career, to senior leadership roles for Atlantic Media and also for USA Today. And it's been such a great career, but my last role was as an assistant managing editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer, where I was running the food section, where I was really taking on an opportunity to transform the way that local media organizations cover food, really centering it in community, really rethinking the way we do restaurant reviews, rethinking the way we do coverage. And that took place just a few moments before the pandemic. And so that even accelerated some shifts in the way we cover food and the way we cover so much of the culinary industry. So it's been very exciting to bring that expertise from a long career covering food, from being a copy editor and page designer to being in a senior leadership role, to Bon Appetit.
Amazing. Well, I just want to talk as well about your first cover from the March issue, which is a very delicious looking hot dog. But I think, I don't know, tell me more. That cover in a way represents what Bon Appetit is in a way, right?
Absolutely. So on the cover of the March issue is this beautiful Chicago hot dog, and it's got a poppy seed bun and it's incredible sausage, and it's got bright pickles and beautiful chopped onions. It's a quintessential Chicago hot dog, and it's on a stark blue cover, blue background. And it represents that Bon Appetit really can be anything from hot dogs to haute cuisine. When we think about food being a cultural experience for everyone, whether you are having a buffalo wing or if you're having a 7-course tasting menu in one of the world's best restaurants, being able to center around how food shapes our lives is the essence of what I want to bring to the brands. Being able to think about how we experience farming, how we experience restaurants, and how those impact our lives at every moment. The things that we cook, whether we are making a birthday cake or we are trying to feed children, food shapes our lives and food shapes culture. So I want to be sure that food culture is for all kinds of audiences and that culture is extended into cooking and they can cook those recipes for the next generation.
And now with this new job, excellent, you're working with a legacy title here. Of course, I'm sure you're not going to change perhaps too much because the title is great, but what are you planning to add? Will there be any new features or new columns or perhaps new people you want to work with the magazine?
It's absolutely a legacy title that is already stood in very good stead. But there are some things that I think are shaping food culture that I think we can bring and expand. For example, drinks. There is so much interest in beverage culture, whether that is in non-alcoholics or if that's in brewing, it's in sake and it's in oat milk. And so we've added a new feature called Last Call that's in the back of the magazine, where we are going into our archive and giving a new present to old cocktail recipes, classic cocktail recipes, but also introducing new non-alcoholic drinks recipes and having a drinks moment in the book. We're also going to be expanding travel. We know from so much data around food and around experiences that people really are looking for dining experiences when they travel. They are spending so much of their time eating. So you will see in the front of the book and in the feature, well, more travel, more ways to our getaway feature, for example, gives you moments in cities, but also we want to be taking people into deep cultural experiences, which you'll see in our travel issue, which is on newsstands now, what it's like to have a long, lazy lunch in Bogota, but also what do you eat when you get back from a long trip and you've been eating at restaurants and your pantry may be a little bare. So we want people to be able to hop back at home, not even unpack, but also have dishes that they can prepare when they return. So being aware of how people eat, how people travel, what is shaping our lives will be some of the new features that people will see. We will be tapping into those daily interactive experiences with more features.
I do love a long, lazy lunch, I have to say. I think it's missing out a little bit, at least here in the UK. But tell us the travel issue. It's the latest issue. It came out, I believe, this week. What are the highlights? What kind of cities have you visited for their food scene?
Oh my gosh, the travel issue is so exciting. We start in Hong Kong, where we're going across the globe. Part of what you're going to see in this expansion will be more of a global lens at Bon Appetit. So we go right to Hong Kong with our chef, Lucas Sen, and we are looking at street food. We have a wonderful show that's on YouTube called Street Eats with Lucas Sen, and he's taking us into all the food stalls. But what is it like for our amazing chef, who's always showing us street eats? What is it like to eat at home with him? So we go from the street and the food stalls right at home with recipes you can bring there. It's a great example of food culture and bringing culture to cooking. As mentioned, we go on this long, lazy lunch in Bogota. We are also taking you across the U.S. for some of the best bakeries that are really shaping the way bakeries are changing, whether that is using more indigenous ingredients like Gusto Bakery in Long Beach, California, that is using masa in its sourdough with the butter and then making laminated pastries and a change to a Queen Amand, and how they're using European ingredients with all of these other indigenous techniques. Those bakeries are really transforming the world of pastry in the U.S., and we want to explore all of those bakeries so that I think readers will have a sense of how culture is changing food ways. And we want to give a better exploration of those changes, those trends, that evolution that is constantly happening that really shapes the global food landscape, but also shapes American food culture.
And I must ask, I think I know the answer to this. I mean, I guess you cook, right? Because I know you have a lot of projects coming up as well. I think there's an upcoming cookbook as well, which you can tell us a bit more. So are you a good cook?
I'm a very good cook.
Oh, great.
I'm a very, very good cook. I'm an excellent home cook. I'm an excellent baker. I love cooking. I love ingredients. I love going to the farmer's market. I'm one of those people who goes to the farmer's market every day and decides what she's going to cook, whether that yesterday I made some beet pasta from scratch that I filled with some cheese and some brown butter. But I also make laminated pastry. I make my own croissants. I do almost all of my baking from scratch at home, but love to grill a branzino. I love to throw parties. parties. I love to cook a 6th or 7th course dinner and make cocktails for my friends. I'm an excellent cook.
I want to go to your dinner party, Jamila. Please invite me next time I'm in New York.
Yes, next time you're, please let me know. We will have a great dinner party.
But tell us, I mean, will you be releasing a cookbook? What can you tell us about that?
I can tell you I'm working on a cookbook with the chef Marcus Samuelson that is going to be an exploration of the way we can use indigenous ingredients to help fuel healthy lives. The book is going to be called Back to Cream, and it'll come out in 2025.
Oh, amazing. I should tell my colleagues from The Menu as well, which is our show about food. What about, just out of curiosity as well, of course, I know you mentioned that Bon Appetit is becoming more and more global with the travel issue, which is fantastic. But even the US is such a continental country. I'm sure what people eat in New York is different from the other side in California, but in Kentucky, I mean, there's so much, right? It's crazy. It must be so vast, the topics you can cover in the magazine.
Oh, there is an endless number of ways to explore just the ways that people eat ice cream, the ways that people grill. From their grilling in South Carolina is so different from Houston, which we have a great story about barbecue in our latest issue, but also the way we cook hot dogs, how we celebrate holidays is going to be different because we have this huge amalgamation of different kinds of people. Korean food in New York is having this huge explosion, whereas in California, you're going to see much more seafood and much more attention to things from Latin backgrounds. That gives us an opportunity to really see how food drives those different communities and the way they use ingredients and the way we grow food. There is an endless amount of storytelling that happens across the U.S. and those influences that are coming from around the world. We also see how American culture influences global food trends. In Paris right now, there is an explosion of American donuts. Whether that is Krispy Kreme or these very exciting ways that Americans have shaped donuts. And that is fueling these long lines for bakeries in Paris. And that's very, very exciting to see how we share an interest in food. In every culture, there is a fried dough kind of pastry, whether that's a pastéis in Brazil, or if that is a beignet in New Orleans, or some other kind of churro in Mexico. These are ways that we share a common bond. And if we can explore how we use those different ingredients, it gives us some connection and some ways for us to build community, which is another way we can reshape the conversation around food.
Thank you very much, Jamila, and Bon Appetit's travel issue is out now. And that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Jack Jewers. Any comments or queries, email me, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, at fb@monaco.com. We'll be back next Saturday at 10 a.m. London time. Meanwhile, you can always listen again at monaco.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You're listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. It's goodbye from me.